Hello, everyone, and welcome to Krakoa. This is the Dawn of X book chat where we discuss the current X titles going on. Today, we'll be discussing Excalibur and X Factor, as well as talking about some news going on in Onwences.
And this is Rodders.
This is Elmas.
And this is Fox.
The first book we'll be talking about today is going to be Excalibur.
All right, so we're going to be talking about Excalibur by Tini Howard and art by Marcus Toot. I think that's how you say the last name. This book, we're basically going to the Citadel. That's the whole plot of this book today. And truth be told, I don't know much about the Citadel, but I know that it is a focal point for the Otherworld and for Captain Britain's future and past. So, and they haven't contacted Betsy yet. They haven't made any contact with her yet. So Apocalypse and them are trying to figure that out. So they got the skulls to see where it is so they can go to it. So they're on the way of doing that. And we see the former Captain Britain, her brother, trying to sneak in and trying to get the sword again that he said he did not want to get anymore. And Betsy tries to catch him and talk to him about it, but he drives away. So that's a thing that we're probably going to hit on later. And let's see, we get another glimpse of the Akaba.
Cult of Akaba.
The Cult of Akaba. And they're planning on trying to destroy Betsy, her other brother, John.
Isn't he James?
James. And Apocalypse. So we're getting a little hint of them again. They're basically our main villains of this whole story. And we learned that Megan was a little spy in there. Her and Pete were planning on seeing what they're doing. And Megan has like a little emotional moment. And we learned that she also knows that he has a thing for Betsy. So that's interesting. And that her brother Brian does not want to go to Krakoa, even though she's basically begging him to. And we go back to Outer World trying to find the Citadel. And they're all going camping, Rogue, the whole gang, Rogue, Gambit, Jubilee, and Betsy. And this is really cute. This is one of the scenes that like everyone loves in like an excellent story. They're all like having little cute moments, showing that Shogo the Dragon is hungry. You know, Jubilee is saying she wants candy. I mean, it's saying she's going to eat protein bars, but it's really candy bars. And then the queen of the Citadel sends people to attack them and actually attack Shogo while Jubilee is flying over riding him. And Jubilee loses it. And she's like, Betsy, make sure Shogo does not see what mommy is about to do right now. And she explodes all of them, all the people that the queen sent down to attack them. Like, we haven't seen this kind of power from Jubilee maybe since the alternate universe, the Age of X-Men. She showed that power a little bit when she was going crazy, when she was found out that none of it was real and she was robbing everything. But even then, it wasn't this extent. So that was really cool. We always knew Jubilee had this kind of power, but she's kind of funny and she never really shows it. And then at the end, you see the queen showing Jubilee, Gambit, Rogue, and Richter in the Captain Britain outfits, which is interesting because we've obviously never seen that before. And that was a little cliffhanger that we had. And that was Excalibur this week.
Not really a lot. Happened in this issue, like, it's super exciting. My favorite part is actually like the Jubilee, like, using her powers so like wildly, because I don't know about anybody else, but it looked like an anime. Like, it looked like almost like the way a manga, like, she was like running and just like,
yeah,
shot like everything down on everybody, and it was like all the giant explosions. I'm like, that's something out of Naruto, and I'm like, I was
right.
I really love like Apocalypse's like speech at the beginning. It's so impassioned and such a way to open the book.
Right.
I had a lot of fun reading it, and it's like you see this reflection with Apocalypse trying to, I think that's LaFay still on the table. He's trying to get something from her. And, like, we're supposed to see what Apocalypse was doing as good for mutants. However, like, at the end of the story, in Khan Akaba, you see the same thing happening, but it's someone killing another human. And we're supposed to be seeing that as bad. So it's, like, a nice visual parallel of, like, what makes what Apocalypse is doing good and what the Khan Akaba is doing bad. And I thought it was, just, like, a very nice, like, I don't know. It was very nice to see visually.
Right.
That's a nice thought process. I didn't even think of it that way, honestly speaking.
Yeah, Sam, I didn't either. I really, not much happened in this issue, but I really love the art in it. Like the little outfit panel we get of Rogue and her little camping outfit, the Citadel army when they, you know, get shot down and doing that big arrow, that shone of white is really pretty. Like, it's a really, like, the artist went all kind of all out on this issue for probably what little they were kind of given.
That might be why, because there was, like, there wasn't a lot happening otherwise, so, like, they might have went all out with the art, maybe, like, just to try to beef up the story a little bit.
Well, I feel like this is probably the start of something big, especially, like, with that reveal at the end, where Saturnine showed everyone wearing a Captain Britain outfit, because mm-hmm. she said that, like, this will reveal their true selves. So I'm like, but what does that mean? Why are they all in Captain Britain outfits? They're not British.
Yeah.
But I guess, are they all now Swarm Protectors?
Yeah, and Betsy's not even in the lineup.
Yeah. It's weird.
So,
Oh, go ahead.
Well, we know Excalibur is going to be big because we know from some news we're going to talk about later that Excalibur is going to be a big part of the X of Swords. But we'll talk about that more later.
I really dug this whole thing during the speech that Amos mentioned earlier about Apocalypse, how he says Krakoa is only half of a whole, forever longing, and I made it that way. That part of the speech right there, I was like, oh man, like, we're going back to that, because they haven't touched on it since House of X. So that was really cool, getting a little taste of that again. And I'm hoping that that's going to play a major part in future stories, because the fact that they just dropped that tidbit, like, it's a pretty big deal.
I don't really think there's much else to say about this. Does anybody else have any last thoughts on Excalibur?
Yeah, Jubilee was a badass. That's all I got to say.
Does anyone know much about Saturnine?
I haven't read the original Excalibur, although my best friend is making me read it for him. I say making, but I'm just doing it because he really likes the series. But apparently she used to be Captain Britain's ex-girlfriend for a while.
So I
don't know how that's going to play in, especially because Megan was just introduced back into the story.
Right. So. Interesting. Yeah, and that's a whole other thing about Megan and Brian, you know, not fitting in or not wanting to go to Krakoa. Like, where the hell is he? He's AWOL.
Well, we did see him when trying to get the sword, but other than that.
Yeah, but, like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
Where's he at?
Being depressed.
All right. I guess we can go into our next book, which is going to be X-Factor with Almas. Oh, X-Force with Almas.
All the X-books sound the same, so it's fine. So this one we have X-Force. And X-Force starts off with a very nice issue of father-son bonding between Akihiro and Wolverine, where Wolverine and Akihiro stab themselves through the head. And this all takes place in the, like, nice newly introduced tiki bar in Krakoa. And Jean and Wolverine have this conversation about how they should bond with how he should bond with his sons better. And we get to see this freshly reborn Domino. Without her scars, without her flaws, and without some of her memories. And she and Sage have a conversation, which then leads to Sage getting into a fight and having most of, like, Krakoa get into a fight with each other. But Beast stops the fight and takes Wolverine elsewhere because they need to go to Terra Verde because something is weird going on there. Because apparently all communications have been shut off and they need to get there. So what happens is Quentin, Domino, and Wolverine go to Terra Verde and they see that it's been attacked by, like, a plant, by a plant god, by a plant something, and so they're trying to save it. So after that, while they try to go to explore to see what's going on, they find out that, like, the entire city has been taken over by this kind of, like, plant thing, which turns out to be a plant god by the end. And while Hank leaves them to deal with that, he goes to get Tom Cassidy to, like, because he hasn't been resting well. So while he's doing that, the plant god on Terra Verde attacks the muscle part of X-Force, and because Beast is busy, he can't hear them talk. And X-Force ends with this, like, really creepy scene of Quentin being dragged back into the temple, yelling it's an angry god. So, what did we think of this issue?
This issue was brutal. it's weird because, like, it has those, like, cool little moments, but it's also got brutal images in it. Like, the portal being blocked by dead bodies and shrubs was insane. Like, it's, like, blocking their path. I didn't even know that that would cause it to have blockage, but I guess it makes sense if you can't walk out of it.
I don't know. It's very interesting to see these new villains being introduced because this feels like a tie into horticulture for some reason. Like, having...
Right.
I know, because we haven't seen in horticulture for, like, a while now. I think I want to say it's been, like, a couple of months.
It's been, like, 5 weeks. Five or six.
Five or six. And, like, they were introduced as these, like, eco-fascists, eco-terrorists. I wouldn't know which term was more politically correct right now. but basically, this seems to tie into that. And there's, like, seems to be, like, this push of, I don't know, this really weird eco-terrorism push in the X-Comics. And this seems to be part of it. Because a lot of them seem to be having a lot of, like, your enemies be nature. So I wonder if Krakoa is going to be an enemy again anytime soon. That was a really weird tangent.
This was a tie back into, you know, the previous issue of X-Force, where this is that same country that they went to, where they basically, where they had to deal with those people basically turning into plant sentinels, kind of. It turned, like, human-plant hybrids and everything. So this is a tie back, and it looks like the plant thing that was happening to them there has, like, gotten worse. And,
I feel like this is the thing that's gonna come into, like, the future stories of the trees are killing the kids, because I feel like that plant god thing is gonna follow them somehow to Krakoa.
Quentin gets a piece of it on his Converse while he's walking back. That's the plot of X-Force. That's the next 6 months for you, Benjamin Percy. I've done it.
I think the plants killing the kids, that's not going to be this. That's going to be the weird plant aliens that they're battling in Empire.
Oh, the Quad Team.
Yeah. Thank you for remembering their name. For the life of me, I can never remember it. I just call them the weird aliens. But
only reason I remember is because I keep telling myself you have to read that damn book before it starts.
I also wanted to point out something really interesting. It's like, I think Domino's aware that she lost such a good chunk of her memories, but she also said before she died that she didn't want any of those memories gone.
Yeah.
So there's this interesting thing of, like, was she manipulated? Did Colossus maybe tell them to remove those memories, or did Xavier choose to remove them? And, like, she has this back and forth with Wolverine that it's, like, I removed them for my own good. Maybe I did it for, like, a better reason. But it's also, like, Domino was so insistent on not removing those memories. So I want to know what happened in that resurrection protocol, whether it was, like, a fluke from Xavier or, like, it was something that she chose.
I think it was Colossus. I think this is going to be a thing where Colossus has a big reveal of betrayal against her. Just like, because they like to do that a lot in the X-Men anyway. Because think of like Storm and Forge when he did that ultimate betrayal and he tried to take her powers away and that was revealed. I feel like this is almost kind of on the same level. It's like, because that's why they made a point in the last issue when Domino was dying. She told him, she's like, please don't take this away from me. Like, I need this. I need my memories. This is who I am. I want to remember. I don't want to be reset. And he's like, okay. But for himself, it's kind of selfishly too. I feel like he knows that she would technically be better and happier if she lost those memories. And she'd probably be better to be around. She wouldn't be as intense. So he's like, well, I'm going to have Xavier, you know, make you better, make you happier, just like everyone else is being. So I think it's going to be I think she's going to find that out. Probably a psychic or something's going to tell her and bring it back to her. And her and Colossus are not going to be on good terms anymore.
Hmm. I mean, like, that's an interesting thing to do, but I don't think it might be Colossus, just because it seemed Colossus doesn't want to, like, go of his pain either. So it would be unfair of him to, like, do that and also keep his pain from, like, what happened in Russia. So yeah. It seemed very hypocritical of him. I do think that there might have been a betrayal, but maybe not at his level. Maybe at some other level.
Let's keep it real. We know who it probably is. Who's the one that always thinks he knows better for the mutants? Who always ends up doing the thing that he thinks it's right?
Xavier?
No. Beast.
You think it's
Beast always F's things up, thinking he's doing something better.
Oh, you know what? That would actually align with everything that's going on right now. Because Beast,
the soldiers in the right place.
Yeah. I mean, the reason this whole country debacle is happening is because Beast, you know, he screwed up. He didn't do it right. He left things unchecked. He thought he knew better, and now the whole country is becoming a giant plant goddess oasis.
Because he said he always had to be a step ahead. He always had to be ahead of the curve of what's happening. And this is probably one way he's trying to do it.
This is really interesting because it's like setting up Beast to be a villain again after he was just absolved of being a villain like 2 years ago. It's just like, I mean, I don't mind it. I kind of like that Beast gets in trouble for his hubris. That's kind of the appeal of his character.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's like, would Beast really disrespect Domino that much?
You see, the thing with him is like, and what I've been noticing a lot in this whole Dawn of X stuff is that people are making choices that seem like villainous or like with bad intent, but it's for the greater good. So I feel like that would be a gray line with Beast, like where he's like, well, I did this because I also want you to be able to focus. I don't want you going AWOL, so I took this away. But I kept, you have the memories, but I took the pain away. So you're easier to keep in check.
Do you think the scene that Percy teased for the next X-Force is actually just this betrayal scene? He said it was hot and steamy, but could it just be like an intense fight scene and he's been just like fooling us?
With all these writers, like, they probably went to the Hickman School of Betrayal, where they tell you one thing and give you something else.
Honestly, because I was thinking it was going to be Domino and Colossus having the most steamy time together, but now I'm not so sure.
Right? I don't know how that's going to be.
It's going to be Beast and Sage at each other's throats. That's what it's going to be.
Let's kind of like twist back into something less serious. Let's talk about that Tiki scene.
Okay. Before we start, because we were just talking about this before we started the podcast, what's on the seat that Gabby and Toad are on is Make More Mutants.
It is?
Oh, yes. Wow.
I translated that while we were talking.
Wow.
There's awesome. There's little, like, writing all over the place in the Kiki scene. If you look close enough, there's writing. You can see, like, there's a, like, in the little direction sign, you know, near the volcano, there's a direction sign, and, like, a few of them have, you know, writing on it, but I don't know what some of it says. I really like all the little, like, details you notice in here. Like, there's so much going on that you're like, ooh, what? There's so much to notice. You can spend like 20 minutes going over it and not notice everything. Like, there's still stuff in here that I'm noticing that I didn't notice this time around.
Yeah, I mean, this whole page was basically my favorite part of the whole issue. And because you see, like, Jean and Apocalypse sitting together, and she's drinking out of an Apocalypse tiki cup right in front of them, which that's funny because no one else is sitting with them, because I think everybody else is kind of, like, still afraid of him, because why wouldn't you be? But I guess Jean isn't, because she's, like, a powerful omega-level mutant. Like, what are you going to do to me, you know?
I just noticed that Apocalypse is holding a wine glass.
Yeah.
He's drinking wine.
He's bougie.
A nice Pinot Grigio.
Let's go around and say what, like, everyone's little favorite moment of this thingy is.
I think I'll go first. I really like that Sophie Cuckoo. I like the consensus, the fact that everyone's like, yeah, that's Sophie Cuckoo at the bar. I like the fact that she has, like, 5 shots in front of her. Because apparently one of my friends commented she has the most reason to drink 5 shots.
Right. I like that.
I like, sorry. I obviously like Fred Dukes is the bartender.
Right.
I wish they would do, like, small, like, e-comics online, like, involving Dawn of X, just, like, stuff you can just get on, like, the Marvel website or whatever, of just, like, small, like, not exactly, like, serious moments in Kuro, like, more, like, just, like, everyday stuff. I want Fred Dukes as a bartender, and everybody goes to him and talks about their problems, and he just, like, gives them advice or, like, just jokes with them. I want that, because I'm so happy he has a job now.
And, right.
And what's it called? And Leah teased that his job is going to spread out through other books. And I would love if, like, we get through multiple books of, like, people just going to the bar and he's just, like, talking to them. Like, I think that's a really cool job for him. Like, that's not, I was thinking it was going to be something a little more serious, like a records keeper or, like, a writer who does, like, their story, like, the historian. But, like, he's a bartender, and he's in a really, and his assistant is a Noel, who's also one of my favorite characters. So, like, that was, and I mean, like, there's all the, like, the little, like, all the, like, keepsakes around the bar area. Like, you see Nito's helmet. I still don't know what that skull is, but I like that they have the Shadow King's, what's it called?
Fez.
Yes, it's Fez. I was trying to remember what the name of that was, but you gotta remember, in the words of Doctor Who, fezzes are cool.
I just noticed that's Stripes' helmet, too.
Yeah.
Hmm. Where's Stripes' helmet?
Right next to Noel.
Is that his helmet? I thought it was a
Stripes.
Yeah, that's his helmet.
Yeah, right underneath the skull.
Oh, that is. Okay. See, even now, there's not noticing.
That's crazy.
So what were really your guys' favorite parts?
I dug the upper right-hand scenes were the ones that I was digging, because I was like, who's Christian Frost sneaking off with? Because that ain't Iceman. I was like, oh, he's stepping out. And then, like, seeing...
It's got to be Shinobi Shaw.
Right? That probably.
Yeah, probably.
And then Sinister with that little horned person. But look at Sinister. He's being all loved up on. I'm like, oh, I love that. And he's sitting all sassy-like. And then also seeing... his name? Oh, Sebastian Shaw puking in the water was hilarious. That made me happy. I was like, oh, he can't even hang.
Yeah.
So, my... No, it doesn't at all. He talks a big game, but can't hold up. But some of my favorite moments were a lot of the random moments, like characters you never really see interact with each other. Like Maggot and M are Penance hanging with each other. I don't have they ever had a scene together?
No.
No, but like they're all lovey-dovey on each other. That's a two people I wouldn't have ever put together, but I kind of love it. It would definitely give Maggot more of a scene. And then Danny, Moonstar, and Betsy talking and kind of like, in my mind, they're kind of like arguing with each other because, you know, they're both leaders, like arguing each other in a good way. They're like, yeah, you know, Gambit's giving me guff about this. And Danny Moonstar's like, yeah, Magic's trying to do her own thing. So I feel like they're just like comparing stories in my mind. And then another little part is Havoc, Karma, Psylocke, and a Banshee and the Multiple Man dupe all sitting together. Because, you know, Havoc's obviously, like, drunk. And then Karma put her leg on the table, which kind of reminds me of, like, a...
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Reminds me of Guardians of the Galaxy, but more random enough, it reminds me of a Real Housewives scene.
Oh, my God. When that
lady put her leg on the table.
Right.
And then... that's what it reminds me of. Real Housewives of Krakoa. even though no one's married except for Rogan Gambit. And then it really makes me happy, or kind of like makes me laugh, because Psylocke's at the table. I mean, not Psylocke, Polaris is at the table with Havoc. I feel like she's trying to make herself want to talk to him, but then he's so obnoxious that she's just like, oh, why did I even sit here? I love it. Because I feel like in the beginning in X-Men 1, remember, she's like, maybe I should go to him with Cyclops. And she's like, nah. I feel like she's like slowly keeps trying to go back to him to make amends with about their whole relationship. But she just can't because he's annoying.
Right. And I also love like the little winks to the old X-Men creatives that are in there. That was really cute.
Yeah, you got Claremont, John Byrne.
Who's the mermaid?
The mermaid's an old character.
Yeah,
apparently it's a character called Lifeguard or something.
Yeah, but... and she's wearing red lifeguard outfit.
Oh, that makes sense.
I also like this, like, there's all so many like different like relationships and like romances going on in here,
right?
Like, you got some really cute ones. Like, you got, like, Rogue and Gambit are sitting together, like, being all lovey-dovey. You got what looks like it could be Guido and, maybe Siren. I don't know. But also, you have Quan and Psylocke sitting, and, like, it looks like that could be, that looks more like Thunderbird than...
Yeah, that looks like Thunderbird.
And he looks like he's, like, touching her back and everything.
Uh-huh.
And then you have these, like... And then it's, like, you have all these just, like... And it looks like Roxy's flirting with, Transonic. Even though it was, back in Gen X, like, the recent, you know, Kristen Estrain run, that, like, she was still in a relationship with Mercury. Oh, I mean, we don't know what happened. But, like, there's just... So, and then just, like, my honest favorite part of the Tiki Bar, like, not this one-page spread, but what happens afterward. I love that Logan is bonding with his children.
Right.
Having stab roulette.
And Gabby's so hyped about it.
I was just like, ah, Snicked family. Thank you.
Can I just mention one little thing that I really love?
Sure.
The Apocalypse Tiki Cup and the Magneto Tiki Cup are, like, so great. And I want a pair for my own. Like, I think I might just, like, chop down a tree and carve my own Tiki Cup at this point. Because I want them so badly. They're so cute. These are, like, it's like, Marvel, please make some mutant merch. I'm so tired of seeing the same, like, X-Men merch. This is something I would buy. And we would only be drinking out of Apocalypse Tiki Cups from now till I die.
I just noticed something else about this, about the scene. If you look at, like, the tree that's, like, all the lights are, there's, like, behind the bar, there's, like, a tree that's coming out, and, like, all the lights are going, are, like, hanging off of it. I noticed the base of the tree, it's a sentinel head, and it's, like, all the leaves and everything are growing.
Yeah. I love that. That's pretty awesome. Like, they're, like, resourcing it. Something that they were scared of now is, like, part of their bar.
Yeah.
I do... Like, is that Wolfsbane's dude that's underneath her? Like, is her dude alive again?
I don't know who that is.
It could be Feral.
Could be Feral. Yeah. I was like, wait, I thought that dude was dead.
I'm like, because they can't bring him back. He's not a mutant. And his soul's, like, with Mephisto.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I just, all these, so many of, like, my favorite characters are on here, but Warren isn't on here, and I'm so disappointed.
Oh yeah,
he's the one guy that would totally party on this, you know?
Right. That is weird, actually.
I think they're planning something big with Warren. I think the fact
they
that
have not to seen
him do anything like, at all.
I'm like, he's one of the original
Dark
five.
Angel Saga Part 2.
We have not seen him do any, like, and even, what's his name, Hickman said that Warren, like, that team that he picked for the space scene in, like, the to invade the Orcus satellite, he'd said straight up that, like, those are his favorite characters.
Mm-hmm. And
so, like, it's weird we have not seen Warren in anything since then. Next time we'll see Warren is for Empire X-Men.
I feel Hawks like he's...
Fox had, like, one scene with Warren in it, and he died immediately. So, yeah, like,
which I think isn't he going to be part of the Children of the Atom story? I think he's more involved with that.
That's true. Probably. He is.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the mentors for those kids.
Uh-huh.
But to wrap up this scene, I love how Emma even shows up fashionably late to her own freaking celebration with her own posse, and they're all in white. I love it.
Okay, so I think now we can move on since we haven't really had a lot of like issues. We've only had the two, and we didn't have any tie-in issues other than Deadpool. But Deadpool isn't really tying in until next issue. Let's talk about the mutant metaphor. So, yeah. I think the mutant metaphor is essentially just used to. Reflect how mutants reflect the LGBTQ allegory in real life. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah.
A lot of people. One thing I've noticed is that, like, I'm white here, and I'm gonna just defer to everybody on this one. But I feel like the mutant metaphor goes better with the goes with the LGBT movement more than, like, racial equality. And, like, I'm fine with anybody who can take whatever meaning out of it that they enjoy, because that's what books are, that's what the X-Men is for. But I just feel with, like, for example, with the X-Men, it's like, a child can be a mutant, but their parents be human, just say, and they're like, a parent can be a mutant, and their children be human. And it's kind of more like, for example, like you can have a straight parent and them have a queer children, or queer parents and them have straight children. And I think that meta, and like we have the legacy virus, which was a huge metaphor for the AIDS crisis. And I'm going to ask, like, what do you all think? Would you personally agree with that more than anything else?
Here's the thing. I think it would fit more like LGBTQ, an allegory to that versus race, because race is so much more complicated, and race is so much different in the West versus where I come from, and it's really hard to make an allegory that fits race and fits all of race and not just like one specific race.
I feel like in the beginning, like with Stan Lee and everyone. That started the X-Men. I feel like in the beginning it was a allegory for race, just the way it was more simplified. But as it evolved, especially with the legacy virus and all, and especially in like what's happening now, it evolved into more of an LGBTQ allegory.
Yeah, I feel like it morphed into something. Like, it started off for, you know, minorities and othered people at the beginning, and then people started getting more aware that, oh wait, this is more of an allegory for, you know, the LGBT plus community, because like it encompasses that, like what Fox said, being able to be born from human parents making mutants, and then mutants can also father non-mutant kids. You know, it's kind of like that mentality kind of brings it all into effect to make it seem more like it's about the queer or the LGBTQ plus community than anything else. Like, it started off one way, but then it grew into this way.
And it makes it harder.
I mean, you can go ahead, Fox.
Because, like, there are mutants of all race. They're not just, like, one
certain exactly.
race can become mutants. So it's, like, it's harder to do the racial metaphor from this than it is the LGBT metaphor.
And you see countries... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, Rod, you go. I interrupted you.
Yeah, you go.
Okay. I was going to say... It's just like, think about it, if all LGBTQ plus people came together and tried to start our own nation, with that, it would be just accepted as Krakoa is being accepted. Not really, right? Like, you'd have to really fight for it, even though we're just like, well, we're still being, you know, discriminated against, seen as like lesser. We just want to live with each other and be, you know, happy with each other and just live. And that's all the mutants are trying to do on Krakoa. I feel like that'd be the same thing. Because I've seen a lot of different, like, LGBTQ people say they want to just, like, start their own, like, nation and just live on an island.
Girl, that's a mess. And that would be so messy. No, that would be so messy.
Oh, it would be messy. No, it wouldn't be, like, it would be messy just like Krakoa. Krakoa's messy, too.
First of all, the lesbians would be running everything because, let's face it, they have better resources than
us. And the lesbians and the trans community would be running everything.
Yeah. Like, they would just be bitching about everything and then too lazy to do anything about it.
Yeah.
I think, okay, so I do feel like in the, as if we're going to talk about Krakoa being, like, a gay nation, I would just like to point out that there would probably be the issue of bisexuals if they are in a heterosexual relationship. Is their heterosexual partner allowed on Krakoa?
Oh.
Yes. See, that would work.
Yeah, I would
imagine so. See, like, that would work in that sense. But on a more serious note, I do think the metaphor is kind of lacking sometimes. And I mean this in a nice way. I want the metaphor to work badly, but I feel like a lot of writers just use it just because we are writing mutants. That means we already have enough diversity, because this metaphor means they're like subtextually gay, so it's fine, or like they're subtextually like diverse. And like,
so like they're it's their out.
Yeah. And like you get to see, you never see intersectionality really addressed in comics. And like, I think it's been only rarely done with like Storm, when she talks about her blackness and her relationship between like her blackness and being a mutant. I haven't read like enough Storm to like remember which that issue came from. Or like, Cena Grace said something really good about it, and I know I keep quoting him a lot, but I read a lot of his interviews about how he can't really do a lot with Bobby as a gay mutant, because he's gay, but he's also white, he's also cis, and even as a mutant, he can pass as a human, unlike characters right. like Annull or like Warren or like Roxy that have to like cover themselves up. So that's the only like profound thing I've ever seen like about the mutant metaphor in that sense, because all the people cling to it and can't see like the flaws of it. And I think it's still, sometimes it's okay to like step back and be like, the mutant metaphor is flawed, but it works sometimes.
It is a 50-50 thing. There's like, I mean, we have the Morlocks. The Morlocks have their own, you know, or basically a metaphor for like these people that can't fit in with the pretty ones. And like, for example, when I go to Pride festivals, I often don't feel gay. Like I don't feel gay enough to fit in. Like I don't feel I don't feel like I fit in there sometimes. And that's like a, it's, and like, I mean, I still enjoy going, like I go and I have fun, and but I also feel like I'm,
you're so othered.
Yeah, no, everybody treats me super nice. Like I'm like, I meet friends, like I talk, I get like, I'm a sucker for free stuff. So I like, I get like swag while I'm there. And I still feel like I'm like, I shouldn't, like, for example, like I shouldn't be there. And like, and I also, I kind of get on a level where like the Morlocks come from, like the more, like, they're like, we don't fit in. Like you don't want us at the Xavier school. Look at us. And like, yeah. And so
I think in a certain way, like, I do relate to a lot of them, to a lot of mutants who reject the fact that they're mutants, and or like rejected on like a subconscious level, like Warren, because Warren for a very long time would only date humans. Like, other than Jean Grey and Betsy, all of his love interests have usually been humans. So on a subconscious level, he's rejecting the fact that he's a mutant. And I relate to that a lot because I come from like a very religious background where I had to reject my both like my bisexuality. So like I relate to it in that way. But a lot of writers don't have like the nuance to see that take in like those characters, because a lot of the writers are unfortunately straight. So they can't really see the like the nuance of the mutant metaphor. And I think the problem, and I think the way to fix the mutant metaphor is just to hire more writers who are gay, who are lesbian, who are bisexual.
Correct. Yeah.
And I feel like we're slowly, like Marvel is slowly getting into that. Like they're just now hiring more women on as writers onto the staff. And we're they're exploring more into the mutantdom in general. Like they were trying to do away with the X-Men like a few years ago, but now it's exploding and we're getting more women writers and more, a little bit more LGBTQ writers and people of color, not a bunch, but a little bit. And so that not really deserves a pat on the back, but it's still like a thing in the right direction. And I feel like, especially once we get through this like dramatic first run of Dawn of X, we're probably going to get more, hopefully, more personal stories about, like, a group of mutants or each individual mutant that's going through, like, because they're their own nation now. They're, like, every nation has, like, civil distress, you know, with their citizens, and they have their own little, you know, like, oh, well, I'm gay, and this nation doesn't really appreciate that, the laws for this, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, because the queer people can't go forth and multiply, be fruitful.
Yeah, so that Krakoa, I'm sure, is going to have to address that at some point. And that's what I'm hoping, that Marvel is slowly moving in that direction. Because, I mean, we do see, for better or for worse, we do see the new Warriors title with the characters. They have had some controversy with their names and their designs. I'm like 50-50 on it. I'm gonna have to read it to make a full judgment. But yeah, seeing that by itself is at least still a little bit more productive, like step forward for Marvel, even if it's a little pat yourself on the backy.
Yeah, pandering.
A little pandering. Ew, but at least so it's funky. Still moving forward.
And just a side note, I hate how the controversy from that has spilled over onto Children of the Atom.
Oh, like, God, yes.
Because, like, Vita had to go private with their Twitter, and I'm like, because they were getting so much hate from people. And I'm like,
the book's not even out yet. Really, we don't know anything. Really
and I hate to cut this conversation short, but should we transition to news and previews so we can discuss this in full?
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, it was there wasn't really anything news about Children of the Atom, because like all the stuff Vita mentioned in the interview was stuff we kind of already knew from the like the X-Men panel that they had discussed. Like all Vita said was like they're gonna have like TikToks and Instas and like, so
yeah,
that's just my main issue. We can get off this subject now, but like that's so stupid. I'm excited for Children of the Atom. I bet we're gonna have a lot of deeper, you know, story potential in that book. But yeah, we can go on to news and preview.
Real fast.
Yeah.
I did want to say, with the whole queer mutant metaphor and everything, I feel like, I hate to like put it on her, but I feel like Leah Williams's run of X-Force or X-Factor is gonna have to, it's gonna be like the queer book, because it has such a huge gay, bi, queer lineup that it's gonna be the one that a lot of, at least for me personally, I'm gonna be looking at it with a microscope, because I'm like, it has a lot to build up to, because she wants to touch on all these things, you know, about the trans stuff and identity and queer relationships on Krakoa. So I'm like, for me personally, I'm like, that's my title. Like, that's the one I'm definitely going to be like looking at, to see just how it's handled, because so far no one else has really done it to that extent. I think that Leah's going to do it.
Between X-Factor and Spoken of the Atoms, they're the ones I'm most looking forward to, because even since before even their books were announced, I was like, yep, Leah Williams and Vita Ayala are going to be the two books I'm going to be the most excited for, because I love them as writers. I love their X books. I love their non-X books. And, I mean, this previous to, like, them being announced, Dawn of X was kind of a sausage fest. Like, let's be real. Like,
absolutely.
Like, it was a big, like, straight sausage fest. And, I mean, it's still not, like, you still have, like, an overabundance of dudes compared to, like, non-dudes. And so, like...
Especially the same dudes writing multiple titles.
Yeah.
I'm like, you didn't have anybody else that could write that title?
Yeah, that's what's disappointing.
See, that's how I feel about the Marauders. If they had anyone else on that book, I would have loved it so much more.
Well, see, I like Gary Dugan writing it, but I do feel like since Kitty, well, Kate Pryde was, or technically, I guess, still is the main voice, and then you have Storm and Emma, it's a lot more predominant leader, like commanding women in it. So maybe it should have been a woman to write it. Maybe even a woman.
Also
of color.
Filled with like gay characters is the thing. Christian, Bobby, Jumbo, they're all gay men.
They're all Cinna's characters.
Yeah, they are.
They literally are all Cinna Grace's characters.
Yeah, that's true. Cinna Grace, that would have been a really good book for Cinna Grace. Like, that's that, and it does hurt, because that would have been really good for him. I have a feeling he would have knocked that out of the park. And also, Eve Ewing, give her the Storm book she wants. Coates is doing Captain America. He can handle that. Like, he's really good at it.
Coates is about to leave Black Panther, and then he's only going to have Captain America. I'm like, hello, right there, X-House, take him.
Well, and see, that's what I'm saying with the success of all the Dawn of X books, because as we've seen, a lot of them have been the top five books of the month over and over, and that's been fantastic for the X-Men. I feel like Marvel's going to see this and be like, hey, we should give more attention to the X-Men. We should develop some of the characters that we haven't developed as much, give them more story. We haven't developed them in years. Like, we haven't really seen anything from Storm in years other than the Inhuman thing. She's not, like, not having fun being a leader and all that. But even some of the characters that we haven't really even seen, like, we get Generation X back, and we get some more of the queer characters that have their own team and establish, you know, how being queer, being an X-Men at Uncle Koa is like. Like, hopefully they'll see the reactions of the fans and the popularity of each character, or the sales at least, because that's what they're concerned about is money. And they'll see that those things are selling. At least they're selling now. And they'll make more books about that.
I just hope once Coates is finished with his Black Panther, I hope they can get him for, like, just at least for even just a limited series of, like, an X-Men Black Panther crossover.
Right.
That's what I want. A lot. And give Eve Ewing that Storm book she wants to do, because I know she can knock it out of the park, because I remember she did that one page story of Storm in Marvel Comics 1001, I think. And it was that page with Jen Bartel that she did, and it was absolutely glorious and beautiful.
It was beautiful. It really was.
And so, yeah, that's just basically what I'm, and like, yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, let's go on to news and previews, because like it's a meaty topic that, I mean, we could talk about for hours. But there wasn't a lot of news this week per per se, there was like little bits and pieces everywhere that if you like were looking hard enough you could find. One thing is we got the cover for Champions 3 and the solicit for it, and it more or less confirmed that the champions are going to be going to Cyclops for help with the whole Outlawed situation.
Nice.
If you look at the cover in the solicit, it pretty much tells you like straight up, because the solicit says that champions turn to one adult they can still. And on the cover, if you look down like closer to the bottom left hand corner, you see like Cyclops' visor like shooting like a blast of some sort, and like, yeah, Cyclops would help them, like, even because like even when the mutant didn't like him, you know, after all the, you know, issues and everything, like, even when he couldn't fit in with the mutants, the champions took him in, and like the champions saved Dust when, you know, when things were going really bad during Uncanny X-Men. And like, so, and the champions are just kids who want a better world, and
they want to do it right, the way the adults forgot to do it.
Exactly, and that's another reason why I think Krakoa should make an alliance with them, because like, there are these kids who don't want to screw things up. Adults are more set in their ways. Who better to make an alliance with for the future than a group of people who are willing to change their viewpoints on things and like look at other people's way of thinking instead of just their own. But there wasn't much other news. Another thing is a friend of the podcast and owner of his own podcast, Jared, who runs Vox Krakoa, I don't know how this man finds things, but like he's so methodical about stuff.
He's like Cypher.
Yeah. He's like his own Cerebro. He found the listing for the X of Swords collected edition on Amazon, which like, good going Amazon, spoiling what's gonna be happening for X-Men. X of Swords. He found a listing, and it basically, the description is, Krakoa must choose its champions to raise their swords and battle for the fate of the world. Which is interesting, and I'm guessing maybe the champions are going to be who was in that, like, big teaser poster. But, what it's collecting is X of Swords Creation, number one, X of Swords Stasis, number one, X of Swords Destruction, X-Men 12 through 14, Excalibur 12 through 14, Marauders 13, X-Force 13, New Mutants 13, Wolverine number 6, Cable number 5, Hellions number 5, X-Factor number 4, and then X-Factor TBD, which like of course means to be determined, which means there's going to be, I'm guessing, like a one shot that wraps up the entire thing. And interesting fact is we noticed that Children of the Atom is not included in this lineup, which is weird because they have representation in that big poster with the Angel analog has his own sword. But I'm hoping that maybe Vita's writing like one of these one shots, and that's where the Children of the Atom are gonna get involved. Maybe like Children of the Atom, Vita didn't want to interrupt the first arc of Children of the Atom to be able to like tell a complete story for at least the first arc. You never know. But like, of course, interesting facts is, of course, Excalibur and X-Men would have the most amount of tie-ins because they are the main parts of the book. Excalibur, because like the Hickman did say he was working on this with Teenie Howard. And yeah, there's really not much to say here. But like, it's just cool that we know what these one shots are: Creation, Stasis, and Destruction, which those are all big parts of Dawn of X and everything right now. I'm a little surprised Wolverine has a one shot, has a tie into it, just because like all of Wolverine's like stories seem pretty personal, and I don't know how he's gonna get involved in this. But like, I like that all the all the X-Writers seem to be able to work together for an event.
Right. It's like back in the day when they used to do those cross-title events, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like Extinction Agenda and stuff like that, where it ran the whole gamut of the stories, or even like, even if it was just a little bit, it was still part of it.
But yeah, that's not really, at least we know what we have to look forward to. Like, that's not, it's, can anybody think of anything? I feel like I'm missing a piece of news that I was going to talk about.
I don't know if you're missing any piece of news, but I was going to say that on the Champions thing, it would be good for them to befriend at least Miss Marvel, you know, Kamala Khan, because I know the Inhumans are going to come back at some point.
Yeah.
And you know, the mutants and Inhumans don't have the best history together.
Yeah.
I just remembered what you guys are forgetting. The cover to Empire.
The what?
The cover to Empire with Cyclops holding the flower and the Skrulls and the Kree behind him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so yes, the Empire teaser. So it looks like Krakoa is going to be making an alliance with the Skrulls and the Kree, which is cool because Hulkling's awesome and the X-Men are awesome and they should all be friends. And if Namor's a mutant because he's half human, half Atlantean, then Hulkling should be mutant because he's half Kree, half Skrull. There, I said it.
Hulkling's a mutant.
Boom.
I'm holding out because I read the Sorcerer Supremes, Doctor Strange, the Sorcerer Supremes, and they showed a future where Wiccan is a leader of the X-Men. And I'm like holding out. I was like, I know his mom's no longer a mutant, but god dang it, I want him to be a mutant so bad.
Same.
I'm like, think about it. We need another good mutant with magic.
Yeah, I mean, well, when Scarlet Witch thought them up, she thought she was a mutant, right? Yeah. So she could have, like, made, when she made them in her mind, she could have made them a mutant. The Wiccan and his brother.
Yeah.
So, technically, he could be a mutant still.
I just
want to
be part of it.
But yeah, thank you, Almas. That was the one thing I had completely forgotten. And, we did get solicits this week. That's something to talk about. There's, we learned that the weird white-skinned guy from, what was it, X-Men, like, 2?
X-Nilo.
Yes,
he's
gonna be back. He's gonna be back in June, and he has all these weird animals with him, and they're very creepy looking. And we learned we got a new cover for for Empire X-Men. We got to see some weird mutant zombies versus the plant people, and Quati is out there called Quati. What?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, I got that. I got that correct. Boom. And we see we got a new Wolverine cover that we hadn't seen, where it's like Wolverine running away from a bunch of vampire bats. So that's gonna be fun. We got Marauder. We got a Marauder's cover, which is like just purple with the logo, and then like Lockheed in the bottom left hand corner being like shh. So I don't think that's gonna be the final cover. I think that's just like, it's something they don't want to reveal, so they're keeping it like vague. And then we got this thing called the Dawn of X Saga, which is going to be like a reference book for like if you want to read Dawn of X but you don't know where to start. It's going to be just going over what's happened in Dawn of X so far, which if you're new to Dawn of X and you don't know where to start with one of these things. When I was new to comics, I used to read the Saga books. They've made like a bunch of them over time, and they're always a great place to start because they use a lot of they got like notes and art and everything in them, and it's fun. I don't know if I'm gonna pick it up, but like it's a great starting point for if you're new to X-Men as a whole, or new to Dawn of X at least as a whole.
There's one book that the preview that I was really excited about, the X-Force one, where it looks like they're attacking Russia.
Yes.
With their own little mutates.
We had seen that one in the panel previously. That's the only reason I didn't mention it.
And how about that Cable one with one of the... Isn't it Cuckoo that's turned into...
I don't think it's a Cuckoo.
I think it's the Cuckoo in her diamond form. We haven't seen them in their diamond form in a while.
They can turn?
They can turn, but they haven't in a while.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
And they can turn only parts of their bodies.
Oh, nice.
So, like, they have, like, more control of it over than Emma. Like, for a while, they even had, like, a phoenix shard in their hearts because they turned their hearts into diamonds.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, that makes sense.
Well, on that, like, since I need to obviously figure out what story that is, do we have things that we want recommended reading for people that are in quarantine?
Self-distancing right now.
I mean, other than Dawn of X, I always suggest, I'm very much, before Dawn of X, I was very much, I loved the side titles of X-Men. Like, I was never really a main title type of person. I like books like, I always recommend NYX, even though the first, there was NYX and NYX2, No Way Home. And the first NYX was done by Joe Quesada. And it's very problematic, honestly speaking, if we look at it as a whole. Like, I mean, it's a pretty problematic book, but, like, it's, like, I mean, it's, a lot of people forget that, like, X-23 was a sex worker when, like, was not forcibly, she was part of, not something she wanted to do, but she got strong-armed into it. But, NYX, NYX2, those are always really good books. X-Men Legacy by Mike Carey, those are always good runs to go back over because they're not, a lot of them aren't really like punchy, fighty. They're a lot more deeper about like the history and like the deep dives into X-Men lore. And of course, X-Men Legacy by Simon Spurrier, the Legion story, which is fantastic, never gets old. Whenever I always reread it whenever I get a chance. But what about everybody else?
Well, I mean, I just reread the Storm solo that came out, I think 2015 or earlier. I can't remember. It was the 2 volumes, and that was pretty good if you haven't read that. And then I didn't reread it, but I looked through it. The No More Humans little side event they had after the, I forget what it was after, but yeah, I really liked that event. That was really cool. It doesn't really tie into anything after that, but it's a nice little story that kind of wraps up in itself, and I like it. It was a good read.
I would personally recommend, I have 3 recommendations. I would deeply recommend Angel Revelations. I love that story. It's also written by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, and I apologize if I butcher the name. I'm not good with Spanish. It's a really good book about, like, it gets retconned later again by Marvel, but it's a really good story, and it made me cry the first time I read it, because it's a story about trying to tell your parents who you really are and not being able to, and still finding the courage to become who you really are. It's a really good story. I'd really recommend it. I'd also recommend X-Factor. The original run, it's one of my favorites. It's over the top dramatic. It's Apocalypse's first appearance. It's Archangel's first appearance. It has so many good things.
Cameron Hodges' first appearance?
Yes, I didn't want to mention him. I wanted to go like one podcast to mentioning Cameron Hodge. I do really like it. And I also like Extinction Agenda. Those are like my top 3, because you don't really need to read the other. You don't really need to be super into X-Men lore to understand what's going on in those stories. Especially for X-Factor, you can just jump in and it's like, it'll tell you the stories of like everyone. It even tells you what goes on in like the Dark Angel saga. It's really good. Also, wait, I had one more. The New Defenders. The original run, Bobby, Hank, Warren, Cloud, Moondragon, Candy Southern, and Valkyrie are all on this team. It's ridiculous. Nice. It's so much bullshit. I love it so much. You guys should read it.
I just wanted to say this one thing that I found while I was looking. The volume came out like a few months ago, like the collection of it. It's a New Mutants, The Quest for Magic. It's like all of like Magic's little tale of like coming from Limbo and like come back to the X-Men and doing all that and trying to fight for Limbo. It's a really good story. It like starts up, it gives you like a lot more detail of like the New Mutants, like Pixie and Mercury.
When she takes Pixie's soul.
Yeah, it's when she takes Pixie's soul, explains all that. Like it kind of goes in and out of stories to try to explain it.
I need to do mine. You had your time.
But read that story, The Quest for Magic.
Anyway, my three recommendations would be, I actually just started rereading War of the Kings. So I would say War of the Kings, the X-Men tie-ins with Vulcan is pretty good. I really love it, especially like it's a very Havoc-heavy story. And I've never been the biggest fan of Havoc, but this story is making me really enjoy him. And seeing him and Polaris' relationship in that. And the next one I would say would be Nick Spencer's run of Ultimate X-Men. It's not the best, but it's a really cool take because they kind of do their own little mutant island thing there too, their own mutant society there. It's a fun run. It's just like four volumes. I would say recommend picking that one up. And the last one would probably be, I had it in my head and now I forgot. I am rereading you see, you interrupted me.
I didn't interrupt you. I went next. You were waiting patiently.
Oh, Lord, you're such a jerk. Anyway, I would say just pick up an X-Book. Just pick up an X-Book and you'll enjoy it.
There's so many.
Worst case scenario, we'll just collect everything on Twitter and we'll post the list.
Exactly.
And you guys should really follow us there. We're at Doc's Book Chat on there.
There we go.
So I guess I'll get into previews. It's actually a very, very stacked week next week. We'll start with the big center main title, which is, X-Men. Basically, the preview really doesn't... It's only two pages. I kind of like how the Dawn of X previews have gone, because most previews are like four pages. But Dawn of X is doing like Dawn of X is trying to go minimalistic with their previews because everything's a big part of the story. The preview for X-Men is just them in space and they're chasing after the whales, and then they realize the whales are turning around to come at them now, and that's never a good sign. Then of course the next big story of the week is Hellions number one. Which is, I already know, is going to be Almas's pick of the week. This is, of course, they have the one and only queen, Nanny. Well, we get to see Havoc kind of freaks out. Apparently, the team is investigating a group of what looks like to be mutant phobes who've gotten weapons and everything. And Havoc kind of points out, he's like, this probably wasn't just some run-of-the-mill people. This is probably some rich jerk who gave money and weapons to smaller, like, less rich jerks to get them to do work for him. And then they get attacked, and it knocks out Nightcrawler, and, like, Havoc's, like, half-dead, it looks like. And then they start attacking Havoc, like, beating him, and then Havoc... gets this weird demonic laugh and then like blasts two of them and then like burns the face of another one, and he's like and his speech bubbles are really weird looking. They're all like they're all kind of uneven and not normally circular as speech bubbles are, and Wolverine has to stop him, and Rockslide has him in, like, has, like, he's Rockslide super powerful, has him in, like, a grip, and Wolverine's like, you can't kill you can which is funny having Wolverine be the one to say it. He's like, you can't kill them, and Havok doesn't remember what he did, and Siren's like, I can, you know, I can still smell the flesh burning, and Havok's like so confused. He's like, why are you guys looking at me? He's like, what did I do? And so he's scared, and so like we can all pretty much agree this is Madeline Pryor demonically possessing him, right? Like we can pretty much all agree on that.
That's where it looks like it's going.
Yeah. And I mean, since we know Madeline Pryor is coming back, she's a pretty easy guess of who caused this, like him to lose it. Then we get giant size X-Men Nightcrawler, and it's cool. We get a few glimpses of what the old X-Mansion looks like. Now that's all covered in plant life, and like we see vines going through it. Like we see the front, we see the office, we see the danger room, we see Cerebro. And it's all just, like, covered in plants and everything. And then we see a portal, and, like, people are coming through it, and it's, like, and they're talking about how it's supposed to be deserted. And we talk about, like, I-Boy is there, Magic, Cypher, and Nightcrawler, and Lockheed are all there. And
talk the best about team. How
this is going to be this is a really neat team. I really like it. And it's funny, like, three-fourths of the team is blonde, which is just a thing I wanted to mention. But they mentioned how, humans have constantly been trying to get through the portal. Like, not even just mutants who hate, like, X-Men. Mutants who just want to see what the foe is, like, constantly been trying to get through the portal. But the point is that Krakoa had smelled a mutant in the vicinity of the X-Mansion. So they are, they're going to investigate it to find out what's going on. Then we got the other big, we got another big book of the week, and that is Fantastic Four X-Men, and the X-Men are on the tail of the Fantastic Four heading to Doom Island, and it's really cool. They use Cyclops put on the helmet that, like, redirects and magnifies his optic blasts, and they use it to shoot down the Fantastic Four, which is, that's certainly gonna instigate things further. And basically the Fantastic Four are safe. They use the Invisible Woman to, like, get back on, to, like, put them in a bubble so they can land safely, and then they figure out how to, they land, and basically Human Torch takes straight off to fight them. And then there was this preview kind of flew under the radar. I don't remember Benjamin Percy tweeting it out, but there was a preview for the new issue of Wolverine. And hold on, just let me get to it really quickly. Sorry, everybody. But, we did get a preview for Wolverine, which I'm surprised more people did not talk about. I had found it, because there's another, like, little side thing. If you're ever looking for a preview for a book, at least Marvel previews, you go to the Previews World website and you look at the books that come out for the week. You should be able to find previews for books, like whatever book you're looking for. And we get in the Wolverine preview, we see him in the snow, like, probably after where the last thing ended up, and he's face to face with Sabretooth, Lady Deathstrike, and some type of scientist. We still don't know who that is. And Wolverine's having an inner monologue about how even the prettiest things hide the negative aspects of it. And it's like he's fighting them, and he stabs the Lady Deathstrike through the stomach, and when he realizes it, and it flashes, and it's Jean. So, like, I don't think this is real. I'm almost positive this is a hallucination, somebody messing with him, because as we know, Sabretooth is in Krakoa, on, you know, in the bowels of it, and I don't think he escapes. I think he is going to escape eventually. I just do not think he escaped yet.
Yeah, I mean, that seems factual. And wasn't he getting messed with some kind of, I forget what was, some kind of spirit or something in Wolverine? Yeah.
Yeah, the Pale Woman. I think she has hallucinogenic powers. Like, that's my...
I feel like, isn't this the same thing
I'd like to interrupt this conversation to say that the Pale Woman is sexy. That's all I have to say. Okay, sorry.
Isn't this, like, the same thing that they did with Wolverine when they did the Return of Wolverine? If anyone bothered to read that terrible story.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I didn't read it. This also kind of reminds me of, like, the hallucinogenic of him killing the other X-Men. Or just reminds me of Old Man Logan, which is a whole another can of, you know, worms.
Yeah,
that was all the previews for the week. What book is everybody most excited to read next week?
Well, I'm most Hellions. Excited to read. You know, Amos is excited about Hellions.
If Nanny isn't in Hellions, I'm going to be so upset. I've had such a terrible month. I am so excited to see Nanny. If Nanny isn't there, I'm going to be so upset. I'm just going to complain the entire of the episode next week.
I hope Nanny's in there, especially for you, most of all. Because I don't have many experience in Annie, so it would be cool to actually see that character too. But the one I'm most excited about is actually the giant size Nightcrawler, because of the other character that's in it is magic. I mean, I love Nightcrawler too, but I feel like they're gonna have, since she's in there, she's put in there for a purpose. I feel like they're both gonna have like a philosophical conversation, because you know Nightcrawler has been all about, you know, making his own religion, not knowing what to do on Krakoa, what to believe in. And then it's been hinted at that magic isn't really okay with Krakoa. Like, she's there because all the mutants are there, but she's kind of indifferent about it. So I feel like they're going to set that up for them to have a conversation about Krakoa. And I'm really looking forward to that because I like that kind of things.
Juan?
He took mine. He just keeps just taking things from me. Jesus. Okay, I'm already quarantined with him. Somebody take him. Yeah, I'm excited for that one too. Mostly because, like, I love Eyeboy and I love Nightcrawler. He's like my favorite X-Men. And I love Magic. She's one of my top three females. So, like, this team is my team. And I also just want to see, like, it's cool. It's going to be cool to see the bones of the old X-Men mansion, where it's like they're going back to their roots kind of thing and seeing it all fall apart. And I'm hoping that, like, we get some, like, emotional moments from it of, like, man, this is where we came from and this is where we are now kind of thing. But yeah, I'm excited for that one.
And that's, I don't know what book I'm most excited for. I mean, I'm kind of just excited that Fantastic Four X-Men is coming to an end. Not because it's a bad story, just because I want the story to be over with so people will stop arguing about it. But
is this the last book of it?
This is number 3, but it's coming closer. Like, that's what I'm...
Oh, okay. I'm about to say it was like 3 issues.
No. It's going to be 4. I'm excited it's coming closer to an end. I mean, everything's such a big book this week that it's kind of hard to pick a favorite. Because, like, you got the crossover, you got the one shot, you got a number one, you got the main book, you got an issue of Wolverine. Like, it's hard to pick a favorite. I mean, I think I would probably actually end up saying Giant Size as well, only because, like, I like Nightcrawler a lot. I like that Alan Davis is coming back for art. It looks like it's going to be almost like a sort of like creepy horror mystery almost level. Like, there's going to be some, like, because they're going into an abandoned mansion with just like vines everywhere trying to look for something because there's been weird occurrences. That's the making of a horror movie.
Right.
It is.
And so, like, I it should be interesting. We'll see. We'll definitely see what happens. But yeah, that's basically everything for the week. Anybody have any other last thoughts they want to talk about? Anything that I might have missed?
Nothing you might have missed, but I do want to say that I'm also excited for Nightcrawler. I'm just more excited for Hellions. Someone's got to be excited for Hellions. It's unfortunately me. You know, that's like the unfortunate part of the trade-off is that I'm the one excited for Hellions.
I'm excited to see Madeline Pryor. Like, if she comes in this, I'm excited when she comes in.
I'm excited to see if she rips his Havoc's clothes off and make him wear the mankini again.
I'm excited for Hellions because I was talking to somebody and I was like, what's his name? Chris Sasson, who runs X-Men Monday over at AIPT. Mm-hmm. And because he's going to be the X-Men Monday, the big subject is going to be Hellions. And I was like, is it safe to say that that Hellions is basically the Suicide Squad of X-Men? And he agreed, but then someone commented, another person was like, a Suicide Squad wouldn't be the best allegory for them as X-Men can't really die. So a lot of people, like she said that she sees Hellions as like a group of aggro mutants who can let out their frustrations in battling against like all their like more violent tendencies on bad guys instead of like each other on Krakoa.
Right. Okay.
It sounds like the plot of like Yakuza. Like Yakuza Zero, where like Kiro decides that he's gonna like leave the Yakuza because he wants to be a good person, but also he can't leave the Yakuza because he's violent.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, this is what it's reminding me of.
I agree with that.
That is actually not a bad reference. I've never played the Yakuza games.
I'm excited to see Sinister's part in that whole story.
Yeah.
Because that's my boy, so I want to see where he falls in that whole
group. Like, is he their handler or something? Is he the Amanda Waller of the Hellions?
That'd be funny.
And also because Psylocke owes him a favor.
True.
So
I'm assuming that's why she's there. Because I don't feel like she would be there if she didn't have to owe him something.
Yeah, I was...
Oh, I did read something interesting in, like, Hickman's... In one of Hickman's interviews, he was talking about how, like, when Fallen Angels ended, they were like, where are we going to put Psylocke? And Zeb Wells was like, hey, I think I have an idea for it. So she was fit in last minute, but apparently she fit in so naturally that it's going to feel like it's part of the story. And I'm quoting Hickman directly here, but I'm excited to see what her part is because she seems to have been added in, like, last minute.
Yeah,
I mean, she is really violent, so I get how she would fit in.
The reason I compare it to Suicide Squad so much is because, like, you have all these villains, and you could compare, like, Psylocke to Katana and what's Havoc to Rick Flag. Like, you can compare these, like, it's almost like it's small, like, analogs, and, like, like, even, like, you could compare Scalp Hunter to Deadshot, and...
I'm like, who's the Harley Quinn?
Nanny.
It's Nanny. She has all the sex appeal.
All of the sex appeal. She's got the curves.
Yeah, okay, so that's about it for the week, everybody. This has been a really good episode. We got some good discussions. We had some laughs. We talked about what we're going to do when we're all stuck indoors for months.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands, everybody. Wash your hands.
Use hand sanitizer when it's not, when water and soap isn't available. But exactly. Washing hands is a golden standard.
Yeah. Clean your houses. I mean, you don't got to like clean. Like wipe stuff down. Wipe down like doorknobs, handles, everything. If you have to go outside, keep it to minimal as possible. If you're just getting like food and supplies, try to stay away from people. Just be smart, everybody. It's not it's really not that hard, honestly speaking.
Also, don't spread misinformation. If I'm really good at catching it, because this is one of my special interests, is viruses, and I hate misinformation. So if you really need anything checked, please send it to us on Twitter. I'll check it for you. I'm cool with it. I know we're an X-Men podcast. but in these trying times, I'll also be your fact check.
If you need virus information, go to unworthingtons at twitter.com. I will not be able to help you. I'm a dumb. Don't trust me. Don't difference between something. I'm like, oh yeah, that's gross. And so don't go to Almaz. Go to at unworthingtons.
There you go.
Let's just end it there.
The best way to social distance is read comic books, people.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, just like do what Corsair did with his own two sons and social distance from them.
On that note.
Okay. I'm at unworthingtons on Twitter.
And I'm Rod Bunny Slay on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm Chongo ATX on all the socials.
I'm Agent Fit77 on Twitter.
And thank you for coming to our habitat.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Stay safe.
Enjoy the
fun. Bye.